Chris Theriot.
Bill Eisen. Welcome to Newsmakers. Baseball season is a couple weeks away, and we preview the Rockies, Nationals, and Phillies. My guests on the show are Tracy Ringlesby, Jamal Collier, and Todd Zielecki. They give you the inside scoop on the Rockies, Nationals, and Phillies, respectively. Enjoy the podcast.
My next guest is Tracy Ringlesby. He's our national writer at MLB.com, and he's also covered the Rockies for a long time as well. And Tracy, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, no problem, Bill. Always good to talk to you, man.
Thank you so much. Hey, and likewise. Tracy, we got to start off with Ian Desmond. He got hurt last Sunday. He got hit by a pitch. He has a broken hand. How devastating is this injury for the Rockies?
Well, they think he'll be back by the middle of April. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, then it won't be as bad. And, I mean, you were around Ian when he was with the Nationals. One thing you know about him is he will be in shape, he will be ready, and he will do as much as he's allowed to do so that his recovery time, once he gets permission to start hitting, shouldn't take very long because he'll have everything else in place. You know, that it serves him well that they brought Mark Reynolds back on a minor league contract. He can provide protection at first base until Ian comes back. He can also provide protection at third base. He did play shortstop when he was at the University of Virginia, mm-hmm. and he can play in the outfield, but he was the primary first baseman last year. So his presence takes a little bit of out of the way, but as Clint Hurdle said, he can't be as creative with his offense without Desmond. Desmond gives him a guy to hit sixth or seventh who can steal bases, who can hit and run, who can go the opposite way, and given the way their lineup shapes out, that could really provide a lot of opportunities for the team once they get him back.
I got to tell you, though, going to Mark Reynolds. Now, my memories of Mark Reynolds was a guy who struck out a lot, didn't make a lot of contact. Yes, he hits home runs, but can he be consistent enough to really help the Rockies?
Well, he was last year. He went to right field more often last year. But let's remember, he's going to be a bench guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to be the guy that if something happens, he steps in, and he'll be one of the few right-handed bats they'll have on their roster who can play in the outfield if they want to give a Parra or a Blackman or a Gonzalez a day off against a left-handed pitcher. He'll be a guy that they can use at that time. His everyday play, his regular play, would come early until Ian's ready to come back. But once Ian's back, he's the guy that's going to be the first baseman.
Gotcha.
And Buddy Black's made no qualms about that. They're real comfortable with what they've seen, just from his work ethic and his professionalism. They really like what they have there.
Tracy, before he got hurt, how did Desmond look at first base?
He looked fine. You know, it was like I talked to a couple people from the Nationals organization even about him, and they said, you know, his errors were throwing errors. His errors weren't because of fielding problems. Mm-hmm. Sometimes his arm was just too strong, but he always had good hands and he always had good reaction. So, you know, when you adapt to playing center field and your first time you're ever out there is in a big league game in June or late May, that just shows the athleticism and the aptitude that he has. So, I mean, they were very happy with what they saw at him with first base. Most of all, they were happy with his work ethic and his attention to detail. And it should not be a problem.
Obviously, it seems the Rockies' offense is going to be just as good as any other year. How do you feel about their offense? I love Blackman. I mean, I'll never understand why Blackman's always on the trade block. He's going to be a good guy.
Well, that's because the media puts him on the trade block. And they write about him being traded, but the Rockies really haven't given it that much consideration. I mean, they still have 3 years of control on him. Mm-hmm. So it's never been a thing where the Rockies have been out trying to push it. It's been more of agents and writers or broadcasters all creating this thing about, well, who could the Rockies get rid of? Well, they could trade Blackman or they could trade Gonzalez. And if you look at their roster right now, both are still here.
Right.
You know, neither's gone anywhere. So, I mean, I think, you know, really the ultimate of their offense is that Desmond probably, when he's healthy, when the lineup's healthy, he probably fits best as a number seven hitter.
Now,
I mean, this is a guy on good teams has hit in the upper part of the order. But on this team, and with their lineup, he probably fits best at the seventh spot, which I think speaks for the type of depth they have in their lineup.
Right. Now, Tracy, a lot of people think the Rockies can't compete this year, but the question is going to be, as usual, pitching. And what do you think about their pitching? If they can get a bullpen, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem is they have to get the final six outs. And, you know, they have as good a young arms as anybody in baseball. I mean, the better situation with the reoccurrence of the testicle cancer that's now been found in the lymph nodes. So he's on 8 weeks of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And so he's going to probably be out the All-Star break. I mean, this is a guy who last year once they got rid of Bill Gavett, they allowed this guy to throw a curveball again the last 2 years. They were 12-2 when he started at Coors Field. He was 8-2.
Mm-hmm.
John Gray had much better numbers at Coors Field, and he started throwing a curveball. Chatwood said that he got over early problems at Coors Field once he junked the slider, which he felt was what caused the Tommy John surgery, and went back to the natural thing of throwing a curveball, which he's most comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
When you take Chatwood, you take Gray, you take Tyler Anderson, and those will be the first three guys. They're young. But Buddy Black and I were talking the other day. He goes, Tracy, don't you remember when we were in Kansas City at 85 and 84? I go, yeah, we took two kids out of Double-A named Gubazon and Saberhagen and won the division in 84 and then won the World Series in 85. And you threw Danny Jackson in 84, who was a rookie, but he had been at Triple-A, so he was the experienced rookie. So Buddy's not afraid of that, and he looks at those three arms. And then you look at a kid like Sensatella, who was at Double-A last year, had some shoulder problems, perfectly healthy now. He might be the best pure pitcher in the entire organization. He knows how to pitch and throws 95, 96, but can spot the ball, locate it. And then they have several other guys out of the system. I mean, there's Hoffman, who they got in the Tulowitzki trade. There's Marquez, who they got in the Dickerson trade. And then there's Freeland, who was a number one pick a couple of years ago. He's not afraid of Colorado. He's a native of Denver, went to Thomas Jefferson High School. He says, I never knew that you couldn't pitch at altitude because it's the only place I got to pitch growing up.
Right.
So I think the rotation is going to surprise people. I mean, I think it's a very good rotation. The challenge has always been for these guys is the final six outs. And, you know, they addressed trying to improve that situation. First, McGee's healthy. Last year, McGee had a knee problem. He tried to pitch through. You can't pitch when your legs aren't 100% because you rely on them to push off so hard. Then Ottavino came back at the end of July from his Tommy John surgery. So the 2 months that he pitched were basically spent getting mentally dealing with the fact that, okay, I can throw the ball now without any problems. Then they added Dunn from Florida to give him another left-hander to go with McGee in the later part of the game. And probably the biggest thing, they hired Greg Holland. He came in the other day and threw great down here in spring training. Yes, he's come in 15 months removed from Tommy John surgery, but you know, I think the Rockies feel very comfortable with talking with Holland and knowing where he is because the pitching coach, Steve Foster, was the bullpen coach in Kansas City when Holland first came to the big leagues. And I know late last season I was talking with Foster and goes, and I asked him about Holland. I go, he's going to try to come back from Tommy John surgery. I go, think he can do it? And he goes, you're talking about my son. So I think those two have a type of a relationship that he probably gets a very honest reaction from Holland, particularly before Holland knew that the Rockies were even interested in signing with him. You know, I'm sure he talked to Foster now and then about just things on his rehab program and how to approach it. So that's the thing that they have to have happen. Mm-hmm. This is a team that I think has had the ability to compete for a couple of years, but they haven't had the guys in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning to get the outs. That wears everybody down as the year goes on, and then things just start to crumble because the offense suddenly starts to feel like, well, eight's not enough. We have to get 10 runs, and the starting pitcher feels like if I don't throw a perfect game, we're not going to have a big enough lead when I leave, and everybody pressures. And so I think this year they readdressed that bullpen situation, and I think it's got a chance to be a competitive team if they can just get these people healthy. And you know, they feel that other than Bettis, you know, with Murphy and with Dahl and with Desmond, they expect all those guys to be back at some point during the first month of the season. So stay above water for a while and see what happens.
Now, what about the addition of Bud Black? I think that's been a great addition, and I think he's going to really help these pitchers out. What do you think of Bud Black?
Well, I go back to Buddy when to 1981 when I was covering Seattle and he got called up in September as a rookie and then from Double A and then I was around him as a player when I covered the Royals in 83, 84, 85. So I have special feelings towards him. I think he's very good. I think he's something this franchise has needed. Walt Weiss had a lot of ability and had the ability to do a good job, but when he wasn't Braddich's choice to be the manager, and I think that relationship never really developed. I think Buddy comes in, he's got that type of personality. He becomes the face of the franchise in Denver, takes the pressure off ownership, makes things a little bit easier for Jeff Braddich, the general manager. But he also has a very calming influence on players. And with the young pitchers they have, he knows what it's like. I mean, when he came up with Kansas City, he got sent back twice. You know, he understands what you go through in the middle part of it there. He was never overpowering, but he was successful. He even pitched well at Coors Field when he was with the Giants. So the altitude didn't bother him, and that was before the humidor. So, I mean, I just think he can talk guys through some situations. I think he'll be a good addition. I mean, I think he fits very well into things. He's not an overly emotional or up and down type guy, and I think that will help, particularly with younger pitchers, help them move along.
Tracy Ringlesby, he's a Spink Award winner. He's one of the best writers around. Tracy, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
Laddie, anytime for you, buddy.
Thank you so much. I have one of the best young writers for MLB.com. He covers the Nationals. His name is Jamal Collier. Jamal, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, glad to be here, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Jamal, you wrote a great story on Adam Eden. I want to tell everybody about it, his fascination with cars. And could you explain to everyone what that story was about?
Yeah, so I guess I'll tell you a little bit how it started. I took a look at Adam Eden's Instagram, and, you know, he's got his adorable son, Braden. It's kind of all over there, but the one thing that kind of stood out is he had just a bunch of pictures of cars all over his page. It kind of just got me wondering, hey, what's with all these cars? So, you know, he's a guy who just completely fascinated with cars. It started back when his father was a drag racer, back when he was young and growing up, and him and his younger brother would kind of help out, you know, help his dad put together his car, cool his car down, and kind of be at the racetrack, you know, be the races with him as well. So, you know, from there, it kind of grew into him really wanting a Corvette. And he tells a really cool story, and I won't give away everything, but it's a cool story about really wanting a Corvette and that being his motivation to one day afford one. And then eventually, you know, buying one a little bit too soon before he could afford it. And just really, you know, for him, he has a couple of cars, you know, three or four as far as for him and his family. But really just anytime he sees a cool car or a car that he notices out in, you know, as he's walking around West Palm Beach especially, you know, he kind of stops and takes photographs of it. And he doesn't know everything about cars, but just really fascinated and wants to learn more about him, learn as much as he can about him, see as many as he can, and build and customize as many as he can. So this was a kind of fun story here down in spring training about Adam Eden, the new player for the Nets that I'm sure fans are kind of wanting to get to know.
Now Jamal, I can't leave without asking you about Max Scherzer. How's he doing, and will he be there for opening day?
So, yeah, big step forward for him, as a matter of fact, this week. He pitched a minor league game. And for the first time really all spring, he was able to use his regular fastball grip, which is just two fingers over the seams, as opposed to he had been throwing with three fingers. So, you know, it was a big step for him. He felt great. He still had great life in his fastball. He was able to throw without pain pretty much for the first time all spring training. So, you know, now from going forward, he says he's probably got about three more starts, threw about 54 pitches in that start. Three more starts to kind of go, and he thinks he can get himself up if you add up 15 pitches, you know, per start, he can get to 75 and then maybe, or get to, 70 and then 85 and then potentially somewhere near 100 pitches to go. Now, that lines him up if he goes every fifth or sixth day, that he may be ready some, I think the day is the third game of the season, the second game of the season.
Right.
So potentially he might not be ready just to take the ball on opening day just because they'd have to kind of manipulate something here and maybe give him a long rest or shorter rest. And I think they might just say, hey, we have you ready for that first series against Miami or somewhere in that first week. But right now he's kind of pointing toward, you know, being back and just got to kind of build his arm back up. And he's not that far behind everybody else. So I think we'll see him earlier in the season, somewhere early in May. But I would say right now, I would guess maybe not he'll take the opening day start.
Now, I know after Scherzer that Strasburg and Tanner Roark, but what about the back end? Are you confident about the back end?
You know, a guy like Joe Ross, I think I am, as long as he's healthy, and that's the biggest question always with him. Can he, you know, get out there and can last a full season? He missed a couple months, you know, last year, of course, with a shoulder injury, and he's still kind of tinkering with his mechanics to make sure that that's not a problem for him anymore. And I think once if he's in there, he's a pitcher who was very good in the first half of last year and is kind of continuing to improve. He's still only 23 years old. So I think that that Joe Ross, I do feel good about as far as him going out on the mound, if he's healthy, and this is, of course, a big if. And Gio's a bit of a question mark. You know, he's had a very good spring and is working on throwing that curveball a little bit more and a little bit more effectively. It was a pretty good pitch for him last year when he could command it. And right now it's feeling pretty good for him, and he's kind of had a lot of results. Like he's thrown 12 innings and only gave up one run. You know, it's a big year for him because he obviously does not have the year that he wanted last year. And it could be a huge stabilizing force if they can have a productive Gio Gonzalez this year. I think the biggest question is, you know, once you get past that five, exactly what the Nets have, because they obviously traded away so much depth when they made the trade for Adam Eaton to get a guy like Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez, trading those guys away. So, you know, I think that they have a good starting five and they have a competent starting five. The problem I think might be if they get an injury or they have to replace somebody for a month or so. Just exactly what do they have kind of behind those starting five?
Any idea who the closer is?
You know, Dusty has been pretty quiet on it. He says it's just too early. You know, these guys aren't really pitching in any kind of situations that replicate a high leverage closing situation at all right now. You know, I think it's going to be very similar to what they came into this camp with from the beginning, and saying that the Sean Kelly, Blake Treinen, those guys are going to be who, you know, it's going to be a competition between them that, you know, really is going to be about who's throwing the ball best or who's coming out, you know, who's has their stuff kind of the most crisp here once we get to the start of the season. I think the one thing that we've seen here in the last couple of weeks is just really how good Kota Glover has been as well. And he's a guy who started off really well, you know, had the injury that kind of affected him last season toward the end here. But, you know, he's been the lights out pretty much this entire spring. You know, whether or not they will decide to put him in that kind of role from the start of the season, the closer role, I would probably say that they're not at that point yet. But I think he's a guy that if he continues to show this kind of lights out stuff, that you might have a decision to make somewhere middle of the season or so around the trade deadline, that perhaps if Glover's still pitching well, you can slide him in. But long way of saying that to say right now I think it's still too early to say exactly who it's going to be, but the same couple of candidates I think are still in the running.
Now, I got to ask you about Daniel Murphy and Tanner Roark. Now, I read your story where Dusty's not happy the way they're being used. They're not seeing enough playing time. Any concern there, really?
You know, I think the one is with Daniel Murphy because on one hand, you know, he's not necessarily getting the at-bats they would like him to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would prefer him to not to go there and sit because the guy's got to get his work done. It is March for everybody here. So I think that's the one that they're concerned. And it's also a case where when he comes back from the World Baseball Classic, you don't all of a sudden want to have to play him every day and kind of, you know, get him quickly ready for the season just because that can also tire him out and blow him out. So a little bit of a concern with that. He kind of hasn't found his timing just yet. And really, you know, when is he going to have the time to figure that out? Roark a little bit less. I mean, he's a guy who got roughed up a little bit in his outing against Dominican Republic. That lineup is obviously really, really good. And, you know, they have roughed up a couple of teams here. You know, I think with him, as long as he is getting his bullpens and does get another start here or two possibly before this tournament is over, I think he'll be okay. But I think the biggest one is Daniel Murphy that, you know, this is also kind of crazy that he hasn't seen the field as a guy who was second place in the MVP last year and hit 350. So you think that they had find a spot for him somewhere in the lineup. But, you know, I think that is a concern that they definitely have and a concern that I have as well that, you know, will Murphy be a little bit behind the eight ball when the season begins?
And I can't leave you without asking about Bryce Harper. He's having a great spring.
Yeah.
And do you feel that last year was a fluke? What's your feelings?
You know, I mean, he looked great this spring. And spring training numbers are what they are. And you know, you normally don't want to read too much into him. But, you know, he's a guy who went out and had a great offseason and said he came in feeling good in the camp, feeling stronger, and it showed. I mean, these balls that he was missing last year, he was getting to the warning track or so, they're going over the fence right now. And I think that if he kind of keeps that locked-in approach, we've seen the kind of things this guy can do, whether it be in 2015 or times in the playoffs. So I would bet on Bryce Harper this year. I think he's going to have a big year, a bounce-back season, and be closer to the player that he was in 2015 when he won the MVP than what we saw in this last year, and especially in the second half.
And the final question, Matt Wieters. He's back on the field now. How's he look? And to be honest with you, I wonder why the Nationals needed him. I kind of like Derek Norris, but what's your take?
Yeah, I'm similar to you. I was a fan of Derek Norris and what he could potentially bring. Not entirely sure how much they're going to get from Matt Wieters or how much of an upgrade he'll necessarily be, but, you know, they felt he was. They felt that price and when he lingered out in the free agent market for that long, that they could still get some value there. So, he's only played a handful of games here so far, and is kind of still finding his timing, finding his working his way back into game shape, you know, behind the plate and in front of the plate. So I think he's still figuring some things out, but I'll be interested to see. I mean, the good thing about him, at least for them, is that they're going to be able to put him lower in the lineup, seventh or eighth. So he's not going to be asked to carry a huge load. You know, kind of just necessarily be how much can everything he contributes will almost be kind of icing on the cake. We'll kind of see. It's still early for Wieters at this point.
Jamal Collier, read this guy. Not only is he young, he's talented. And Jamal, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, anytime, Bill. I appreciate it.
You got it. Take care. I have one of the best beat writers in baseball. His name is Todd Zalecki. He covers the Phillies. Todd, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Bill, man. Todd, glad to be on.
Thank you so much. Todd, I look at the Phillies, and I tell you, I like their talent, and I think they could be a tough team in the National League East. What do you think?
You know, I think they could surprise some people. I guess it kind of comes down to if you're a Phillies fan, if you're watching Major League Baseball and you see the talent in the organization, like how much – you know, how good do you think these young players are? Do you think that these young players that most of them are pretty good and will pan out to be pretty good? Then I think they should be maybe a little bit better than advertised. If you're a little bit more skeptical, then maybe they'll be kind of where a lot of people predict them to be. But I personally think that what I've seen from some of these guys in spring training, a lot of these prospects that are going to be in AAA that have a chance to get called up this year, that they could surprise some people. I'm not saying that they're going to, you know, even challenge for an NL wild card this year, but I do think that they could challenge for 500 at least. And what makes that interesting is that if they do challenge for 500 this year, you know, they have a ton of money to spend in the next few years.
Right.
They basically have no monetary commitments beyond this season. So I think they're going to be really heavy hitters, like really heavy hitters in the free agent market beginning this offseason, certainly 2 years from now.
Now, Todd, talk about some of the prospects you saw this spring, and who do you expect to see later in the season?
Boy, you know, it was the first few weeks of camp basically were exciting or fun to watch because of those prospects. They've sent a bunch of them down, most of them down, because they knew going in that they weren't going to have a shot at making the big league club because they need more seasoning. Today, for instance, they sent down J.P. Crawford, who's the number six prospect in baseball. Nick Williams is one of their top outfield prospects. They sent down Rhys Hoskins, a first base prospect, Scott Kingery, second base prospect. And all those guys really showed, a lot of potential this spring. I think Kingery and Hoskins were the two guys that really stood out early, and then Nick Williams really stood out late. And, Hoskins and Williams and Crawford, Roman Quinn, Dylan Cousins, they're all outfield those are outfield prospects. They're going to start the season in AAA. And, Nick Williams said today in Clearwater, I think that AAA team in Lehigh Valley could be scary good, and there's a lot of reasons to feel that way. You know, you go around the diamond. Jorge Alfaro is a top 100 prospect. He's going to be behind the plate. He had a big home run for Columbia in the WBC. They're really all over. In years past, like the Lehigh Valley roster was basically kind of like fringy prospects and like a bunch of 6-year free agents, like those guys that are just hoping to get another shot in the big leagues. And this year, there's really nobody on the AAA roster that's going to get significant playing time that fits that bill. They're all like legitimate, top 30 prospects in the organization, top 100 prospects in baseball.
Wow, that's amazing. Let's go back to the major leagues. They picked up Howie Kendrick. I know he's off to a slow start in spring training, but how much do you think he will help this team?
I think he's going to help. You know, his numbers were a little bit down last year, but, you know, if you talk to the Phillies, they will tell you that they think that his numbers, analytically speaking, are going to bounce back a little bit. You know, I think they're referring to batting averages of balls in play. Like he kind of struggled a little bit in that department last year, ran out of luck a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So they think that those numbers will go back up. Now he's not going to be, I don't think they're looking for like an all-star caliber left fielder, but you know, you look at the numbers last year in left field and right field for the Phillies, they literally had some of the worst production at both of those spots in Major League Baseball. I think they might've been like, and this is just a guess, like 28th and 29th in OPS in left and right field, respectively. It was right around there, right near the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Kendrick puts up the numbers he put up last year, it'll be a huge upgrade offensively. And then in right field, Michael Saunders, you know, he would have been their most productive hitter in the Phillies lineup last year if he had played with the Phillies.
Right. Interesting. Now, I know that Tommy Joseph, you know, he had flashes last year. Now, is he going to be productive, you think? How's he going to be?
Now, for me, when you talk about, like, we were talking about the prospects earlier, and you're not really sure who's going to do what. You know, for me, Tommy Joseph is the most, I guess, intriguing guy on the big league roster in terms of the projected everyday lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because last year, basically the quick backstory on Tommy Joseph, you know, they got him in the Hunter Pence trade. He was one of the top catching prospects in baseball, had a ton of concussions, had a ton of other injuries. 2 years ago, two off seasons ago, he was designated for assignment, taken off the 40-man roster. Nobody claimed him. He didn't even go into big league camp last spring. But then he converts from a catcher to a first baseman, and he plays his butt off in AAA last year. And then he gets called up in mid-May. And then after that, he hits 21 home runs, 47 RBIs, has an OPS a little over 100. So I think what's interesting about him is now he's finally getting to play every day. He kind of shared time last year with Ryan Howard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the question here is, if Tommy Joseph gets turned loose and he gets, instead of 350 plate appearances, he gets 550, 600, is he going to be a 35 home run guy and a 100 RBI guy? And if so, the Phillies are going to be like, great, we don't have to worry about a first baseman down the road. Or is he going to struggle to make those adjustments? And so for me, he is the most interesting guy to watch in that Phillies lineup. Because all the other guys that are in there, I kind of feel like I have a pretty good feel for what kind of season they could have. But Tommy Joseph, you know, he could really go either way in terms of being a surprise or, you know, a disappointment. And then the Phillies, you know, kind of going back and looking at Rhys Hoskins in AAA to maybe take his playing time away from him.
Right. Interesting. You know, Todd, I look at the pitching, and obviously, you know, it's okay, I guess. And, you know, I know they have Clay Buchholz, but, you know, a guy I really like, if he stays healthy, is Vince Velasquez. And I said to myself, why did Houston trade this guy? Because I think he's going to be a good one. And what do you think about the pitching staff?
Yeah, you know, Velasquez, I agree with you, Bill. Like Vince Velasquez has dominant stuff. He really does. And he showed that a lot last year in flashes. But then he also showed that sometimes he had a little bit of trouble with his command. And, you know, he couldn't pitch deep into too many games. And that's been kind of a focal point for him this spring. So if he can kind of learn to pitch a little bit more efficiently, you know, he could really become a force. Because, you know, he pitched last night in Sarasota and really couldn't command the ball that well. So, like, 76 pitches in 3 2/3 innings. Didn't give up a hit, though. Like, you know, walked a few guys. But didn't give up a hit. Like, struck out a good handful of guys. You know, just because his stuff is so overpowering. But I think they're expecting a little bit more from him this season. And then you look at the rest of the rotation. You have Jeremy Hellickson, who's he's going to become a free agent after the season. He's going to be very motivated. Clay Buchholz is going to be a free agent after the season. He's going to be very motivated to put up good numbers. And then you have Jared Eichhoff and then Aaron Nola. Jared Eichhoff is a guy that kind of has flown under the radar a lot. But if you look at his numbers from last year, he was like 189 innings, ERA around 3.7.
Mm-hmm.
Really good, kind of a good workhorse guy. you know, he's not going to be a number one, but he, you know, he's a solid number three, maybe even a little bit better than that. Right. And, you know, hey, you see how much guys, you know, you see how much like a number four, number five guys are hitting and making in free agency. If the Phillies can have Jared Eichhoff as a solid number three for years to come, yeah, I think they'll be very fortunate. And the kind of the X factor in the rotation is Aaron Nola. And Nola last year in his first 12 starts, I personally thought he was an NL All-Star candidate. He had like a 2.69 ERA through 12 starts. And then his last eight, he really struggled poorly. And then, you know, I think a big reason was he went on a DL with an injured right elbow. So if Aaron Nola is healthy and he kind of returns to form, if he pitches like he did the first 2 months of last season, you know, I think the Phillies rotation could maybe be a little bit better than advertised, especially if Velasquez kind of figures it out, you know, and kind of puts all the pieces together. He's got all the talent. He's got the stuff. You know, it's just a matter of him, you know, can he get through the fifth inning at, at 60 pitches rather than 100 pitches?
Right. Yeah, now, Todd, I got to tell you, though, I look at this front office, mm-hmm. and my reaction is they're not playing any games. They want to start winning again. I know Ruben Amaro, before he was let go, he made all those trades to get some of those prospects. But still, right. The front office, I think, has done a hell of a job. And I think they want to win now. Is that right?
Yeah, they definitely, yes. Like, I think what they've done really well is that they're positioning themselves for a move. And so, like, that's why they added Michael Saunders. That's why they added Howie Kendricks. They knew they needed some veterans in this lineup to kind of stabilize things, take some pressure off somebody like Mike Alfranco, take pressure off Tommy Joseph, you know, show these guys the ropes a little bit. They bolstered the bullpen a little bit. They got Joaquin Benoit. They got Pat Neshek. You know, they're hoping that those guys can help stabilize the bullpen, because the bullpen really struggled on the stretch last year. And, that's why they were fine bringing back Jeremy Hellickson, and that's why they acquired Clay Buchholz to give him a little bit more depth. So I think they're realistic. They know that they're not going to, like I said, I don't think anybody in the front office is going, like, we're going to make a run at a wild card this year. But I think they've added enough pieces where they go, you know, maybe with these pieces, if some of these younger players kind of step up and do what they're supposed to do, we can surprise a few people, and then maybe things will kind of get interesting in July. Mm-hmm. If Franco becomes a stud and Joseph does what, you know, kind of what he did in a part-time role last year in a full-time role, you know, can these guys, can they challenge for 500? And maybe, who knows, maybe they add a piece or two. But what I think they're really, when you talk about, like, being ready to win, they are really ready to win, I think, beginning next season for sure, if things don't pan out this year. I mentioned earlier that, you know, they basically have no financial commitments after this season. Every guy that they added this year was on a one-year deal, and that was on purpose. So they're going to hit that free agent market hard next year. And then 2 years from now, everybody talks about their free agent market with Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, you know, possibly Clayton Kershaw, Josh Donaldson. The Phillies are going to have tons of money to spend, and I guarantee you, if they have some holes, and, you know, every team has holes, that they're going to go hard after some of these guys.
Wow, that's amazing. I can't let you go without asking this question. It's my final question. Are we going to see Ryan Howard in a baseball uniform?
You know what? That is a great question, and I have been getting that question a lot from Phillies fans down here. Like, hey, is Howard signed yet? What's his deal? Is Howard signed yet? My take, you know, I think if Ryan Howard would be willing to sign a minor league contract, and I don't know that he is, I think if he was willing to sign a minor league contract and fight for a bench job, then I think maybe he could get in the uniform. But it just doesn't sound like there's any interest in there. Interest from him maybe in signing a minor league deal, and maybe not. And I think major league teams are sitting there going, you know, we just can't justify signing him to a guaranteed major league contract. And it's weird, because you look at some of the analytics. Like, he hit the ball really, when he made contact last year, he was still hitting the ball really, really hard. Mm-hmm. He's hitting the fastball really hard, doing some damage when he hit the fastball. The problem is that he just didn't make enough contact. So. And their problem is this: he can't play defense anymore. He's more of a DH. He can't hit left-handed pitching anymore. You know, he can't run. You know, he's basically an all-or-nothing power guy off the bench. And the problem there is, you know, left-handed hitter, power guy off the bench that really struggles terribly against left-handed pitching. If he's a bench guy and you bring him in a pinch hitting situation in the seventh inning, almost automatically, right? If you have a lefty in the bullpen, you're going to bring in a bad lefty to face Ryan Howard. pretty much an automatic out. So I don't know how he fits, but honestly, I'm a little surprised that no one has kind of taken a shot at him on a minor league deal because he still does have some power. And, you know, hey, why not just bring him to camp and see what he does? And that kind of leads me to believe that, you know, Ryan might not be willing to take a minor league deal, you know, to go to big league camp. And I got to think that if he's not signed before the end of spring training, that I just have a hard time thinking that he will be playing in the minor leagues anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, his career really went downhill after he tore his Achilles tendon, and it was never the same after that. So
it did, yeah.
Hopefully he could get another job soon. So, listen, Todd Zielecki, you're one of the best writers, and I want to thank you for being on the show. Hope to have you back soon.
Absolutely, Bill. Anytime. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You got it. Take care.